is my absolute honor to have the Las Vegas Bowl Ring winner from this past Saturday, Gracie Trother. Gracie, how has things been in the past 72 hours?
It's been a wild ride, pretty crazy. Talking to a lot of people, social media has been going insane. But it's good to be back home out on the East Coast, getting to celebrate with my family and friends back here. So it's been awesome, pretty crazy, but I can't complain. It's been great.
I totally can imagine it's been kind of very crazy considering all the buzz that's been going around the U1 in dominant fashion, to say the least, because when I looked up trying to see how many, if it's one of the more strongest runs by a female driver, it is certainly well up there. Considering you led 95 out of the 150 laps. But as you mentioned in the race, there was a couple crazy instances where restarts were very key, and I felt like, and I imagine the viewers back home knew that you nailed those restarts, but just walk us through the first half before you ended up taking the lead, which it looked like was going to be boiled down to the Brunkati cars and Jesse for that time period.
Yeah, for sure. At the beginning of the race, we actually started ninth. And I didn't realize how good of a car I had until probably around lap 20 or so. I was kind of being cautious at the beginning. I knew we had 150 laps to get it done. And so I was being cautious, trying to pass the cars. I knew I was a lot faster than the cars that were ahead of me. And once I did get around those cars, I could still see the leaders. I'm like, okay, like, the car's actually pretty good. We got a shot at this. And a couple restarts here and there, we worked our way up to the front every single time. And around lap 54, when we did make the pass for the lead, it was on a restart. And Jesse and I think it was Blaine, they were running side by side. They kind of got into each other a bit, and it left me a hole open, and my spotter said, go, go, go. So I went for the hole, made it work, coming out, and let those two figure out what they needed to do as we were going three wide, and I just held my line and went for it. And from there on out, we walked away with it. The car, it was awesome. In practice, we struggled a bit with it being too tight, making us qualify in the ninth position. But in the race, me and my crew chief, we talked a while on what we should do, if we should kind of do the same things we did back at the race in February or not. But we ended up making it work out pretty good, and I couldn't complain about the car. They kept telling me to slow down, save, and I'm like, if I slow down anymore, the car will be stopped on the racetrack. So the car was awesome. It felt like I didn't even have to drive it, that it was just driving itself. But every restart, I executed it pretty well, except for one restart. I did spin the tires, and Jesse did get a little bit ahead of me, and we beat the doors down a little bit, but I ended up getting away from them. But the restarts is one thing I've struggled with this year. Moving up to these bigger, faster, heavier cars, it's very different for me. And so I've been talking to a lot of people, getting advice on how to execute these restarts better, and it ended up working out for me pretty good.
Who has been very helpful on getting those restarts down? Because that's one of the things that around ARCA, for whoever it may be, whether it's like a Sam Mayer or Haley Degerman, Brittany Samora last year, restarts are very vital to get that advantage, considering at bowl rings like Vegas, you want to be in the preferred lane so you can have that clean air and pull away.
Yeah, for sure. I've actually been talking to a couple drivers here back home. There was a guy who used to actually race for my dad, and he works at my dad's company, Calico Coatings, now. He was a pretty heck of a driver himself. And me and him, a couple weeks ago, actually had a little restart class over at Calico on the whiteboard. So he was drawing up all these pictures for me, helping me with these restarts. And actually, when I won a couple weeks ago at Hickory, I used the same restart tactic that he showed me. So he's helped me a lot in the restarts. And even talking to some of the guys that I race late model stocks with back home, like Josh Berry, I talk to him a lot, and he gives me a whole lot of advice. So lots of guys like that back home have been a huge help to me.
Speaking of Hickory, before setting up all the questions for this interview, I you talked about how big of a deal it is to win at what is your home track in down in North Carolina with so much history, so much prestige. How great it was it to get that victory, which, and honestly, it's kind of started the momentum that you've been carrying on to this time period right now.
Yeah, Hickory is very special to me. I actually grew up going to that track almost every weekend, and also going out to Concord Speedway. My dad owned a race team. He owned two USAC midgets and a late model stock, so we were out there a lot. My dad used to race there in the early 90s, and so I grew up going to that track, and even when I started racing late models, we test out there all the time. It's only 25 minutes from our race shop in Denver, North Carolina. So grew up there going, testing all the time. I know that track very well. It definitely is a driver's track. Both the turns, they are different from each other. So it's that track's really an animal. It's really bumpy. People come there all the time and say, this track is so bumpy, I can't even see. It's vibrating my seat so bad. So I've kind of gotten used to it. And I'm like, what do you mean it's bumpy? So that track, it's very special to me, and I've always dreamed of my first win being there, and it ended up finally happening. So I'm really happy. My dad was there to share it with me, and my whole family was up there too.
Speaking of the family, it's kind of interesting how some, in this day and age, it's like with family heritage. Of course, I talked to Holly Holland a couple of weeks ago that family is in the racing. The racing is in the family blood. It sounds like for sure it has definitely been in their blood. Just tell us, how influential is it to have a family that's been involved in racing that kind of help you grow as a competitor and also make it this far, and ideally, I'd imagine, get to that next level in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, so like I was saying, my dad raced, and so did his father. He raced too, so third generation. I grew up going to the racetrack with my dad, and when I was around 7, 8 years old is when I started racing. My dad started out racing go-karts, and we kind of looked into the quarter midget stuff, and my dad didn't like how those things flipped all the time. He wanted me to be safe. That's one reason why he didn't want me to start racing, because he knew how dangerous it was and also how much money it cost and how much time and effort it does take in order to make it in the sport. And he was also trying to, you know, grow his business at the same time, and that's one reason why he stopped racing, is from his business. And when I was born too, he wanted to spend some more time with me at home. So it's been in the family. It was just me and my dad going racing every weekend at the go-kart track. We kind of just did it for fun. We didn't really expect several years down the road I'd be getting my first ARCA series win. So it's been pretty special to have him by my side through it all. He's taught me all the ins and outs of it, of the mistakes he's made and the things that helped him out as he was racing. So he's the man who's helped me make it happen.
Yeah, most certainly, for sure. It's very important to have that help and support. Speaking of help and support, going back to that win at Vegas, you had a couple of your teammates like Gio congratulate you, and considering this entire racing, Bill McAnally is filled with all rookies, but you have the most experience for the most part on the concrete compared to the other ones that have mostly dirt backgrounds. Have you kind of embraced, in a way, the mentorship role of trying to help those guys out, but also know when there's a race at hand, you gotta go trailblazing to get the best performance out of any given race, considering everything that has happened this year with the pandemic?
Yeah, being more on the asphalt side compared to Gio, Holly, and Jesse, I know Jesse, even though he's 15, I'm pretty sure he has more late model experience than I do on the asphalt. I know he's raced out on the West Coast for a long time in the late model stuff, so I actually lean on Jesse a lot for some things, and he has some really good advice for me, and I always try to listen to whatever he has to say. Considering he does have 3 wins this year, which is, it's awesome to see him in his rookie year being able to do that. We all lean on each other, even Gio and Holly's experience on the dirt stuff too. driving a loose race car is obviously fast, everyone says, so having that dirt experience does help drivers that do move to asphalt being able to drive loose race cars too. So we all do lean on each other for help.
And when it comes to their driving, it seems like there's some people have a very aggressive driving style, but sometimes the aggression can lead to some contact. Of course, Haley has been known as the very aggressive, move people out of the way, sometimes a little bit too early, but in some aspects, whereas Brittany was more of the clean racer competitor trying to earn driver's respect. Where do you stand as far as a competitive nature? How would you best describe your driving style for those who are unaware of your upbringing and kind of your racing style?
I'd say I'm kind of in the middle of it. I'm always going to race someone as clean as they race me or as dirty as they do race me. So that's the kind of how I've always been. Being a female in the sport, lots of guys, I've had experience of people going after me, guy drivers going after me for, you know, passing them or doing better. I've had it said to my face before. So I will be aggressive when I have to, but I always try to race as clean as I can. I never want to wreck someone for the win because I want to earn the win myself. If I don't feel like I earn it, then the win is not as exciting or special to me than if I did earn the win. So that's one big thing to me, but one thing I've always gone by is if you drive me dirty, I'll drive you back the same. Or if you go out and wreck me on purpose, I'll go out and wreck you back one way or another. So that's kind of how I've always been. But I am more of a clean racer because being a rookie and moving up in the sport, I want to gain that respect and let people know that I'm here to race and not here to tear people's cars up. So gaining that respect to me is really important, especially racing the late model stocks back home. I'm racing against Josh Berry, even Supers. I race against Brandon Setzer, veterans like that who've been racing for a long time. If I gain the respect from them, I can learn from them a lot and go out to them and pick their brain a little bit, and they'll help me out in return.
Oh, for sure. I kind of figured, like, in this day and age, respect is very essential, especially considering how in this business is very cutthroat. But also at the same time, if drivers earn that respect and gain that respect, they're more than willing to help you out in any capacity. And that's kind of what reminded me when you talked about Josh earlier when it comes to those, and also the restart school, which honestly I never realized that was a thing, the restart school, which was something I learned after you mentioned that. So,
well, we kind of made that up, but
oh,
it could be a new thing now.
Yeah, I'd imagine, because even the best have struggled on those restarts. I said to myself, I wonder if they practice that in some capacity, because guys like Jeff Gordon, I remember to this very day that when it comes to restarts, it's never his foray, especially double file. And it always seems to be one of those guys that just couldn't adapt. So I figured something like that might be helpful for any competitor to learn how to nail those restarts.
Yeah, 100%. Restarts are very important to racing because it's either you could lose a bunch of spots or gain a lot of spots. So restarts are a very important part that you need to learn and get down if you want to be successful.
Absolutely. When you talked about during the telecast about your crew chief, Roger, how has he been very influential as far as the team chemistry of that entire 9-9 team and that led to that victory?
Yeah, this year, like, working with a new team, I kind of went through that with going to Red Racing because I've always had the same people throughout my racing career that I've been used to. That I know very well. And so going to Rev Racing, I had to learn how to work with new people. And so that helped me going to BMR this year, working with Roger and my new team. And so me and Roger haven't gotten along the best, but me and him believe in each other. We always have since day one. The first day me and Roger talked, we said we were going to go win a race this year, and we did it. So no matter how many hard times me and him had this year, we've always made the best out of it every single race and always have had good finishes this year. Definitely exceeded my expectations with everything, and Roger's been a big help. He's been really hard on me this year, which I'm really grateful for. He's helped me a lot in my development.
And for those who are trying to be an aspiring racing driver or trying to be an aspiring crew member, how important is it to go into that knowing that sometimes it's going to be hard? Sometimes there's going to be constructor criticism, or sometimes such criticism warrants more motivation. If you could.
Right. So in racing and anything you do, if you want to be successful, if you want to make it to the next level, you're going to have to accept the constructive criticism by anyone, especially the ones who have been there, done that, who have made it in the sport, who have been successful. No matter how bad you don't want to hear it or do, you listen to it. And I've always been the type, my dad's always told me, is to keep your ears open, your mouth shut. Just listen to what they have to say and take it all in. So that's one thing I've had to learn over the years. And learning that and being where I am today, that's really helped a lot, is you have to listen to those things, good or bad. And that is what makes you stronger, and that's what makes you more successful.
Now, there's only a few more races left in the regional level of ARCA. Any of those tracks, you have, of course, All-America, you have Kern, and, of course, Phoenix. Have you had any experience around those tracks, especially considering you're from North Carolina? I'd imagine probably not. If not, out of those three tracks, which ones you can relate to from the ones you previously ran?
I've actually been to all three of those tracks this year. So I raced Roseville in a late model race not too long ago, a couple months ago, back in August. Did that, got some experience there. And then we actually went to test some late models at Kern back in July. So I got to do some laps around there for a couple hours. And then earlier this year, we did the ARCA Menards Showdown race at Phoenix to get ready for the end of the year. So I got some laps there, but we ended up blowing a motor around lap 60, I think it was. We were actually running pretty good there and ended up blowing a motor, so that ended my day early. But I really enjoyed Phoenix. That was definitely the most fun track I've ever been on.
Yeah, I was gonna follow it up saying, like, when it comes to not completing a race, how much did you learn? But it sounds like you certainly did learn. Of course, this was the last race before everything went down with the pandemic and everything. Where back in Phoenix, you had all this practice and qualifying, plenty, all of that jazz. To now this year, it's just, and I know for sure in Evergreen, it was just qualifying, then straight to the race. It was like a 1 day quick turnaround. So I was definitely understand how things can happen. And in this time period, being young, how difficult has it been to know that when it comes to sponsorships or events, it's very difficult to do, knowing these circumstances where some areas, like even when you won, there was no crowds to witness that landmark victory for the ARCA Menards series?
Yeah, so ever since we came back racing after the pandemic, every single race from then on out has been either 30 minutes to an hour of practice, and whatever your fastest time in practice is where you qualify. And so being a rookie, going to all these brand new tracks I've never been to before has been a struggle for me, because this year is my learning year and I've wanted to learn all I can, and it's difficult to be able to do that only having that limited amount of practice. So it definitely has been a struggle, but I've had some great people around me to help me execute it as much as I can, as good as I can, with what time we do have to do that. And yeah, like you said, not having those fans there, and when I won at Hickory, there was no fans. There was a couple of fans. They let some people up in the grass area where you could park your cars and stay in your cars and watch. But at Vegas, there was nobody. So it is a little bit weird getting out of your car. There's not as much excitement getting out of your car, and there's people cheering you on, and you have people to look at. in Scream 2 when you get out of the car in Victory Lane. So it is a bit different. It's a little weird. So I'm just hoping we can get those fans back. But I am glad that they do have the races where you can watch on Track Pass. So that's pretty cool.
No, for sure. Don't we all wish everything seems to settle down where fans could come back and then going back to do more of my passions, which is the writing and the photography side of things, because that's definitely understand that, and hopefully that changes, because it does feel weird. Even when at Evergreen, when Blaine won, it felt weird that there was no one there to witness that. Of course, you can see it on the streams, which is very nice in this day and age, but of course, I'd imagine when that time comes where there's crowds there, that next victory is probably going to be every bit as special.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
Yeah. So, I'm wondering, this is a curious thought, how often people misconcept, because it says your hometown is Denver, North Carolina, how often and how common is it people misconcept Denver being Colorado where you're from, North Carolina?
Oh, all the time they do. I get asked if I'm from Colorado several times, and no matter how many times I put Denver, North Carolina on something, I guess no one reads it right, and they always think Colorado. I actually, ever since the win, I've already had a couple articles wrote that I am from Colorado. But Colorado is not too bad of a place to be from. I do. I went out there for the first time when we raced Colorado National Speedway not too long ago, and I think it's beautiful there. I love the mountains, love the cold weather, and I wouldn't mind even living there, so I guess it's not too bad of a place I could be from. But no, I am from North Carolina, and it's actually our town. We have a sign here when you enter the town, it's called Denver of the East.
Well, there you have it. I guess where I'm from in Washington, there's two Lakewoods, which it's like 60 to 90 minute drive. There's like North Lakewood, and then there's South Lakewood. How I distinguish it is that the Lakewood that I know is just plain old Lakewood. The Lakewood down south, where it's nearby Seattle and Tacoma, I just call it the other Lakewood or South Lakewood. But
okay, yeah.
That just when you mentioned the Denver of the East, that kind of reminded me of that side note. But we're near down to the very end of this interview. So usually at the end when I have guests on or when I do interviews for to write about, I typically try to ask fun topics. So the first one that comes to mind because it's music. How would you describe your musical taste?
Country is my favorite, especially the 80s, 90s country, Alan Jackson. All those singers, I love it. So country is definitely my favorite. But honestly, I like all music. I'm really a big music person. I like classic rock. I like newer rock. I like the pop and rap. But country will always be my number one.
Favorite song from that time period of the 80s and 90s country, because when it comes to that genre, that time period is right around the ones that I typically enjoy the most when the time allows me, because for what mine is all over the place, like literally all over the place. Like it's, I go from a phase to when I listen to certain songs.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of my favorites is probably Dust on the Bottle and Neon Moon. It's hard for me. Every song that comes on, I'm like, oh, this is my song. But I like them all. But I think Dust on the Bottle and Neon Moon are my favorites.
No, for sure. Racing idol that you stand by to this day, like your favorite racing driver of all time. Could be family, could be non-family.
Mine is AJ Foyt. It was also my dad's favorite driver. And he's become mine. My dad has told me lots of stories about him, and I just really appreciate what he's done for the sport. And AJ won in anything he got in. He was a bad to the bone driver, so he's definitely my idol, and I'd love to be like him one day. Just being such a good driver, you win in anything. And also Tony Stewart too.
Those are real good, excellent examples, because when it comes to younger drivers, they will probably see somebody from their time, but the fact you brought up somebody way before your time, but also, of course, you mentioned your father's favorite driver was AJ, that's pretty intriguing, which leads to a real quick follow-up. How vital is it to be versatile in racing? Because you said you run super late models, you all went to the karting, and now you drive stock cars, and whereas your other teammates come from dirt, where AJ started off back in the day.
Sorry, I missed you there.
Oh, I was saying the importance of being a versatile racing driver, kind of like Foyt and your teammates. They have different backgrounds in racing in this day and age, because sometimes there's drivers around the world that they focus on that one discipline, but others will have a passion to do more than one thing.
Yeah, like I grew up racing road course go-karts, so part of what I was interested in is maybe moving up to doing some like road course IndyCar type things. So I think what Jimmy Johnson is doing is pretty cool, going from NASCAR to the IndyCar stuff. So that's something that I was kind of interested in. And I actually drove last year, I raced Justin Haley's dirt UMP modified, and I had a blast doing that. So I'm a really big fan of the dirt stuff, and if I could do dirt racing and asphalt racing, I think that would be pretty cool. But dirt racing is definitely something. If one day when I stop racing asphalt, dirt racing would be pretty cool, just like Tony Stewart is doing.
Yeah, and I imagine for sure your teammates will definitely help you out if anything when that time comes, kind of like how you help them with the asphalt. It's kind of like full circle, doesn't it sound like?
For sure, yeah.
All right. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend time to interview you and also record this program of my podcast where I had Holly earlier on. But for sure, after the win, I figured to kind of check up and see how things have been the past couple days now that you won. And it sounds like you and a lot of takeaways, that is for sure. And I wish you certainly the best of luck going forward to the rest of the season, and of course the rest of your teammates as well, with just a few races to go out west.
Yep, thank you so much.